Hey Sharks fans, thanks for checking out another cast from Teal Town USA. In this episode, we speak with former Sharks coach and broadcaster Drew Remenda, and we talk about the Sharks series versus the Vegas Golden Knights after the Sharks lose Game 3 in overtime. What is goalie interference? The play of Paul Martin, a new coaching staff in Edmonton, and missing life in San Jose.
Fun to have you on Teal Town USA. What did you think of the Sharks game last night?
Yeah, I liked it, except for the end, obviously. I thought that they played extremely well. I thought that they dominated the game until they started taking the penalties in the second period. I thought that they had done, and I thought actually in the third period they were really good too. I thought that they elevated their game when they had to come back. It's just that when you look at that second period where only five shots, Vegas had five shots, but they had three goals, but the Sharks dominate first period. They did a great job in the second. They get the goal, and they've got all momentum. The crowd is into it. Everybody's getting excited. It's only the tank can, and then they take a penalty, and then a goal, and then they take another penalty. Their penalties took the momentum away from them. And as you know, AJ, I mean, in playoffs, in hockey, period, it's about getting the momentum, keeping it for as long as you can, and then getting it back as quickly as you can when you lose it. And unfortunately, I think that when they lost it, they put themselves really in a situation where they had to scramble to come back from a game that they really, I thought, dominated for the first 30 minutes.
Yeah, I got to agree with you. I thought that the first, at the very least, the first 20 minutes, I mean, that first period, I don't know that I had seen the puck just find every Shark, and just it seemed every bounce was going their way in that first period.
Yeah, but that's, you know, and I think it's because of the way that they have played that their game. I think it's because they got the inside track to pucks. They were really good on the forecheck. They didn't spend a lot of time in their own zone. Boom, it was out. They were executing going through the zone. I thought they did a nice job on taking away Vegas speed. They have wonderful speed, Las Vegas. The people haven't figured it out yet. That team's for real, man. That team is for real. And you've got to be able to find a way to slow them down. I thought they did that by having great back pressure, and I thought they did a great job at standing up in the neutral zone with D. And I thought, as I said, they went inside track to pucks all the time. And that's honestly about as good as 30 minutes as I've seen the Sharks play this playoffs, and they've been really good this playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. Eric, you know Eric, I'm sure.
I do know Eric. Hey, Eric.
Hey, Drew. Good to hear from you, bud.
Hey. Thanks, buddy. Good talking to you.
Absolutely. Appreciate you doing this. So overall, I mean, you kind of already got into it, but overall, what did you think of the series so far? That debacle game one wasn't the greatest turnout, but I think the Sharks have made adjustments. What did you think so far, and what can they work on as they go into game four?
I think when you look at it, like the first game, they just weren't ready. It was just like, holy mackerel, what the hell was going on there? And they just weren't ready to go. Even Joe Pavelski said, you know, I have no idea why we weren't ready to go. Sometimes it happens in a game, and sometimes it happens in a series. It just wasn't their game. And as you said, the adjustments they made. Now, they've made the adjustments by doing a great job, and you heard Logan Couture talk about staying above the play, and they don't get caught very often against Vegas anymore, where there's two or three guys getting caught deep. Their back pressure is really good. I think that's one of the adjustments they've made and able to slow Vegas down. What impresses me about the Sharks, and I think this comes from, well, I know it does. It comes from their coaching staff. It comes from Peter, and it comes from Rob Zettler, and the way that they act is that they're so calm and composed. It's fun to watch that team because nothing really rattles them. You know, my last year with the Sharks was the LA series. We all know that series, right? You could see that team. Yeah, we don't want to bring it up. But, I mean, you learn from the lessons of the past, right? You have to learn from your mistakes. That year, you could see them. I did Inside the Glass in those NBC games. And you could see the bench being rattled. You could see them being upset. You could see them getting out of sorts. Watching on TV, you don't see it at all. You see this team calm, composed, resilient. You see them disciplined. They don't change their game when things aren't going well or when they're behind. They keep playing because they believe in their system. They believe in what the coaches, that Peter DeBoer and his coaching staff has has handed down, said, this is the way we're going to play. And if we play this way all the time, or most of the time, we're going to be successful. They believe in that, and they believe in each other. Former Sharks coach, and now Oiler coach, guy I follow all the time, obviously, is Todd McClellan. Todd talks about a belief system. If your belief system is strong in your team, within your team, that means you believe in me, I believe in you, and AJ, you believe in us. You know, that's the team. If you have that within a team, that means you're going to be successful, because you will do everything you can to make sure you don't let that guy down, and you'll trust him to do the same for you. And I think I see that in the Sharks. I like the way they're playing. I like their composure. I like how calm they are. And I would think that after these first three games, that the confidence level has got to be pretty high within that Sharks room, knowing they're against a real tough opponent, but pretty high that they can win this series.
Don't you think there's a little bit more of a resiliency from this team specifically? I mean, we've seen them from like three goal deficits in games. They come back to score last minute goals. I mean, like last night, they're down 3-1. And we've seen in Sharks teams in the past where they just get down and they're just psychologically out of it that they can't make that complete comeback. This year, it seems like that's all changed.
Look at Tomas Hertl last night. The guy was all around it the whole game, all around the puck, all around the net, chance after chance. Took a dumb penalty, yeah, we all know that, but he bounced back from it. And then that tying goal, he was not going to be denied. You want to talk about resilience on just a shift was kind of a microcosm of the way that team plays. He was determined. He was resilient. He was just not going to be denied from getting that goal. He used his body perfectly, big guy, and he was able to just grind out that goal. And the payoff was there. I mean, so I look at that and think, yep, that's the kind of plays you need from everybody. No longer can you just rely on Joe Pavelski or Logan Couture or Brent Burns or Joe Thornton, or back in the day, you know, with Patty Marleau, Danny Boyle. You have to have everybody. And there's one thing I think that Doug Wilson has really done well of this year. How many teams do you know across the National Hockey League got faster this year from one season to the next? Doug looked at last year's team that played against the Oilers and went, we're not fast enough. Got to get faster. Relied on the young guys that he brought in, and they played really well. So there goes again. There's the next guy. You look at Timo Meier, the way that he's been playing in this series. You look at Chris Tierney. I'm a big fan of Chris Tierney. Yeah, I like the way he plays. He does a lot of things right. Marcus Sorensen, you look at the way that those guys have contributed, just third and fourth line guys. That helps that resiliency, because you're not just leaning on your top six all the time.
Yeah, this to me feels like a more balanced team than 2016 that went to the final. And you bring up
– I agree.
You bring up the speed issue. Do you think we see Joakim Ryan get in after some – slow play from Paul Martin last night?
Well, that's an interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah.
And Paul's a veteran, savvy guy. And I didn't like the play in the neutral zone in overtime. But I get it. What they wanted to do there, and then this, you know, talking about neutralizing the speed of the Vegas Knights, what they wanted to do, what Paul wanted to do, was get over and get on Neil as quickly as possible so he isn't able to make a play in the neutral zone. But, you know, James Neal's a James Neal. Hell of a play. If I'm coaching that team, I would have wanted to see Paul back up and accept the rush. But I was part of the coaching staff that lost 100 games quicker than anybody in the history of the National Hockey League. So, you know, I'm now watching TV. So I understand. Because what they wanted to do was get up in the neutral zone as much as possible. You got that back pressure to help. So you want to stop the play before it even starts. So I get what he was doing. I don't know if you can throw a guy in. I think you've kind of got to go with Paul Martin still, and just, you know, understand that he's a veteran guy. He knows what the situation's like. Sometimes you're going to have to, you know, discretion's the better part of valor in those situations. Maybe you're going to back up a little bit. You trust him not to make that read again. But at the same time, you look at that play, and I actually, you know, I was talking to KMBR today, and Tommy Tolbert was saying, well, yeah, I just looked at the game and I saw great play after great play, and that's how goals were scored. You guys know me. You guys know how I broadcast. You guys know how I analyze games. I'm always the grumpy bugger who's looking at whose fault it was, right? You know? So I went, yeah, okay, but it depends on which way you look at it. So I look at that overtime goal and go, come on, Paul, you cannot give up that pass across the way. You've got to back up and accept the rush. On the other hand, Jeeves Neal makes a hell of a play on it. And the shot is all world. It's going to be, I don't care which goaltender's in the net. And I think Martin Jones is unbelievable. I don't care who's in the net. That puck's going in. So, you know, hats off to him and then get him back the next day. But I don't know if you can throw in Ryan and go, okay, go for it, kid. Have a great playoff.
Yeah, good luck.
Good luck to you. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and, you know, and talking about those goals and a great snipe shot, we saw one from Evander Kane last night. And during the intermission, of course, you've got Jeremy Roenick saying he thought it was goalie interference. Anson Carter said, nope, no way in hell it was. So you're obviously the, you know, definitive mind on this. What do you say?
Okay. I talked to Rob Schick, who's now one of those guys that's in the room on the phone now in Toronto, to back Rob, you know, ex referee. And we sat together in a game in Florida that it was Boston, Florida, and the Oilers were in there this year after that game. So we sat down, we talked about goalie interference. And he said, okay, here's the determining factors. Number one, who makes contact? Does the goaltender make contact, or is the forward or the offensive player making contact? Number two, where is that contact made? In the blue paint or outside the blue paint? Number three, is the contact incidental or intentional? And number four, does the goaltender have time to reset and find the puck to try to make the save? So those are kind of the determining factors they look at. All you have to do is look at that and go, okay, number one, who instigated contact?
Fleury.
Barton Fleury, 100%.
Cross-check Couture right in the back.
Yeah, but he comes in and leans in, right? Mm-hmm. And he's the guy that makes contact. And where's the contact occur? Outside the blue paint. So to me, they got the call right. I thought when they looked at it, there was no, that's not goalie interference. It shouldn't be. Do you guys agree with me?
Absolutely, but you know, we're a little biased.
Yeah.
But I think we can be cheering for the Sharks without being totally blind. You can look at that, and that's the one thing I've always loved about Sharks fans, and I've always loved about going into the tank, is that honesty is a policy that they believe in. They don't want to be snowed. They don't want to be told that it's this when it isn't. They're a very knowledgeable group. This is an argument I used to have with a lot of people, but oh yeah, but San Jose, you know, it's like, no, this team's been there 25 years. It's not rocket science. It's hockey, for God's sake. It's easy. You can start to figure it out once you watch a few games. Not that tough, you know? So when I look at it, Sharks fans have always wanted to hear the truth. And I don't think that was goalie interference. And I think when we look at it, it was not goalie interference.
Completely agree with you.
Yeah, no, definitely.
It was JR. JR, what's JR talking about? Boy, he cross-checked goalie harder than that in his lifetime, for crying out loud. What's that guy talking about? He run right through the crease and slew for them, for crying out loud.
Oh. I remember him, like in the Minnesota series, he was like just standing in front of, I think it was Brian Hayward for that matter, and just standing there for the hell of it. So there's been some changes in Edmonton. Jay Woodcroft's going to take over in Bakersfield.
Right.
What's Todd's new staff going to look like?
First off, Jay had the choice. So in Edmonton, it's an interesting market and it's an interesting organization. In Edmonton, they had to do something. There was, for me, firing an assistant coach, to me, is ridiculous. They were so good last year, and all of a sudden they didn't know how to coach this year. Come on.
Yeah,
Jay had the choice. Jay had the choice, and Peter Chiarelli had been talking to Jay for quite a long time, ever since they worked together at the World Cup of Hockey, about when are you going to take your own bench? When are you going to be set out? If you want to be a head coach in the league, this is what you got to do. Mike Babcock, who Jay works for in Detroit, said the same thing to him. You know, it's probably time now. And again, very personal bias. There's not a better gentleman, a smarter hockey guy on the planet, and a harder working guy and more organized and trusted than Jay Woodcroft is with Todd McClone. Jay is fantastic. And he was given the choice. You could stay with the big club or you can go down and take your own team. And Jay thought it was a good time to go take your own team. And I don't know about you guys, but living in California in November, January, February, December, those times.
It's not bad.
Little easier living in Edmonton. Jimmy Johnson, unfortunately, took a hit because the penalty kill wasn't very good this year. A lot of problems in that regard. I don't think it was Jimmy, as you know. And he was relieved of his duties. Ian Herbers is the other coach. And Ian went, I think within an hour, he became the new head coach of his old team, the University of Alberta Golden Bears, where he's led that team to, I think, 3 or 4 national championships. So Ian's fine. So what Todd is doing is he's looking right now. My belief is that Trent Yanni's coming to Edmonton. Todd and Trent, as we know, we were in San Jose together when Todd first got there. Trent was in Anaheim. It was announced the other day that he is not coming back to Anaheim. Trent is an outstanding developer of defensemen. Look at Cam Fowler, Josh Manson, Hampus Lindholm, Sammy Vatanen. He had a big hand in those. He's a terrific guy to counter off of Todd, because sometimes you got to play the heavy, and Trent's very good at it, but he does it in a very constructive and smart way. He is a guy that I have a ton of respect for, and he's got some of the best sayings in the world. So I love Trent. I think he's coming up. Rumor is Glenn Gullickson, former assistant coach, who Todd knows, who's actually from the same place as Trent's from, Hudson Bay, Saskatchewan, might be coming on board as well. But I think Trent for sure. After that, Gully might be a good choice to have another head coach type guy there. But I'm not sure what else he's looking at. I think it'll only be 2 guys. It won't be 3. One thing, Dustin Schwartz, the goalie coach, remains. Jeremy Capel, the video coach, remains. But I would bet dollars to donuts that that Trent's going to be with the Edmonton Oilers next year.
I think it's like there has to be some price that was going to be paid, just because I was one of those people that had Edmonton taking the division this season at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. So did a lot of us. Mm-hmm. And then that first is the best game they played all year was the first game against Calgary. Connor got 3 goals and they were amazing. But you look at that team. Well, we talked about Doug Wilson recognizing last year that his team had to get faster. And I don't know if you can hear that in the background. It's my dog who's just destroying the soccer ball. Get out of here, George. Go away, George. I'm on the radio. The other aspect was that the Oilers got slower. They weren't as fast. They lost Benoit Pouliot. They lost Tyler Pitlick, and they lost Jordan Eberle. And they didn't replace that speed. They've got top-line guys that just aren't fast enough anymore. Milan Lucic, I don't know if you watch, guys, but there is a guy who really needs to change his game in order to compete in the new National Hockey League. If you're not fast, you're not playing in this league anymore. So, yeah, so there are some things that went wrong. There are some injuries. Cam Talbot didn't play as well. But, you know, they call them career years for a reason. Last year, there were a lot of career years. This year, there weren't as many, except for Connor. And you know, Connor's just damn fun to watch. I mean, my goodness me, he is everything that there's people have cracked him up to be. He's fun to watch. 200-plus point seasons, and it was kind of funny, you know, when things weren't going well, and it was near the end of the year, and everybody knew where everything was going to be. They weren't going to make the playoffs. Everybody talked about the scoring race. One guy that didn't talk about it was Connor, but when you watched him play, you knew he was thinking, okay, I'm winning the scoring race. If anything's happened this year, I'm winning the scoring race. So he is a very determined athlete, but they've got some work to do. They've got to make some changes in the summer to help Todd and whoever his new coaching staff is to become faster like the Oilers, or like the Sharks, I should say.
Well, and you brought up weather earlier. I mean, aside from the weather, what is it that you do kind of like miss the most about just the city of San Jose? And obviously, aside from being around the boys and everything down here.
Can I say everything? Is that too broad of a subject?
No.
I will tell you. And you know what? Nobody was more heartbroken than me when I was relieved of my duties or not my contract not renewed. I loved San Jose. A huge part of my life was either a coach or broadcaster with the San Jose Sharks. I loved everything about San Jose. I still do. I still go back and I get greetings by fans that are just, it's so heartwarming and so nice that they still think of me like they do, or else they're BSing me. But that doesn't matter. I'll take that anyway. They're BSing me. I don't know. Maybe they're just being nice to me. Feel sorry for me walking across the street, all sad and mopey and look like I'm living in -60-degree weather every day, which I am. There's just everything about it. There's the people that work in the organization. And this is not, I know it sounds cliche, but it's not. They're family to me. I genuinely love these people. There's so many people in there that I would do anything for. And, you know, there's people that work in that office that I've been around since I was going to say since I had hair, but that's a bullface lie, as you guys know. Since I was still in my 20s, you know, I was 29 years old when I got to San Jose, and they're still there. And I grew, you know, I developed into a kind of mature adult with these people. There's so many people who I walk in and it's like I'm home again. I've got my family, of course, but I talked to Doug Wilson last time we were there, and Doug and I were sitting talking, and we were just talking about the people in the organization, and we're trying to narrow it down. He said, well, because we're family. He said, you know, even if you're not with your family or apart from your family, you're still family. And I thought it was the right way to put it. So there's so many parts about it, but also, and I know this is going to sound pandering, like I'm a WWE wrestler and go, what's up, Cleveland? But, the fans were so great. I don't know if you know this, but you can go on Google, you can search it out. And my kids love to do it because they think it's the funniest thing in the world. Edmonton fans hate me, Sharks fans, they're not so much. The Sharks fans are so good to me all the time. And I love being just walking through the crowd at the end of the game and talking to Sharks fans. Like being, you know, walking in the Westgate Mall and having Sharks fans stop me and talk to me. I think Sharks fans are fantastic. They get the game. They love the team. They love the people associated with the team. They don't want you to BS them, as we talked about. They want to hear the truth. And I thought that Sharks fans and I had a great relationship with them. We kind of understood each other. We got each other. And, you know, I know I'm going on and on, but California and San Jose in the Bay Area is a great place to live. But the reason it's a great place to live is because there's so many great people. I always have this argument with people about, you know, Canadians are so nice. And I always go, you know, I said, you know, go live in California for a while. Go live into the Bay Area and talk to me how great the people are there. We've got such great friends there still. But I look at the Bay Area as my second home. I loved it there. I love it there still when I come back to visit. It's one of those things, though. It makes me sad and happy at the same time when you come back, because I'm not there anymore, but I get to come back there. So it's kind of bittersweet, but to me, it was the best part of my life professionally.
Well, I don't understand. What do the Oilers fans have a problem with? Do they want smoke blowing up their backside? Or
Sometimes they want to watch See the World. But you know what? I'll just backtrack a little bit. This is the way that broadcasting is going. And if you look at broadcasters throughout the National Hockey League, and this is being sent down from network, it's also being sent down from team ownership, they want you to preach, not preach, they want you to build the brand, promote the brand. I get that now. You know, here's what happened. If you want my breakdown about what happened in San Jose with me, I can give you that. Okay. I started talking like a coach. Like, I was a broadcaster, but I kept talking like a coach. I spent a lot of time with Todd. Todd and the coaches let me watch a video with them all the time. It was great for me as getting insight. And it was back for me, like my first love being coaching. And I watched game after game with Todd and the coaches. And, you know, you start breaking down the game. When you start doing that, you start getting a little negative, because the game, as Jeff Norton used to say when I was assistant coach, the great Jeff Norton, I would come down every period as assistant coach and I'd walk in the dressing room and Jeff Norton would say the same thing. Hey, Drew. And I go, yeah, it's pretty friggin' easy from up there, isn't it? Exactly. You say that to me all the time. Every game, we ever used to laugh in this. But when you start watching from up where I was watching, when you start watching the video, it's pretty friggin' easy from up there. So the more I watched the video and the more I was around the coaches, the more I started to sound and talk like a coach. Which is fine and dandy as far as how right you are. It's fine and dandy for how honest you are. But as Greg Jameson once told me, yeah, but being right doesn't make you bulletproof. And he's right. It doesn't. And I would understand if I'm an owner that's got, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars tied up in this thing, and I've got my team being broadcast with my broadcasters. Why does this guy keep criticizing my team all the time? Mm-hmm. Why does he keep knocking my team down? Now, for me, I looked at it as I wasn't knocking the team down. I was just being honest. Right. But there's a way you can be honest without kicking somebody in the rear end all the time. So I think I started sounding less like a broadcaster and more like a coach. Now, if you transfer that across the National Hockey League now with broadcasters, what you see is less and less analysis, more and more pumping up the tires. And there are, I think, few of us analysts still left. A few of us. There's not very many, but there's a few of us. Even though it's Sportsnet. Now, I work for a network. I don't work for the Oilers, but I broadcast the Oilers games, but I work for Sportsnet. Even they want to say, hey, you need to be positive, guys. We're a partnership here with the Oilers, so you need to be more positive instead of you know, jumping on them every time they make a mistake or when a goal is scored or whatever, the game, they lose the game. You've got to start to accentuate the positive. And so we did that this year a little bit more, and it was a tough year to do it, but we did it, and I thought we did it successfully without completely selling our souls. But I think you have to every once in a while. Brian Hayward and I were talking about it with last time we were in Anaheim. Every once in a while, you gotta kind of sell your soul a little bit and show the reasons why things are good versus the things that are bad, because most people are cheering for the team that you're broadcasting, right? And you have to kind of, if you can find that balance to be honest yet positive in the tone, you might last as a broadcaster, especially nowadays.
Well, I got to tell you, I mean,
I don't know if that's a long-winded answer to probably what I didn't really answer your question, why Edmonton Oilers fans hate me. You know me. You guys have known me for a long time. I'm not a very nice person. I'm an obnoxious SOB. You know that.
No.
Loud mouth. I'm long-winded. I'm cynical. That's probably a few of the reasons why.
Oh, no.
We have one guy. Kevin, I'll tell you a story. It's minus 40 degrees. And we're walking. Kevin Quinn, my broadcast partner, and I, we live close together. We live right downtown. My apartment in Edmonton is literally a block away. The longest part of my journey to the rink is the elevator ride down from my apartment. So it's great. Kevin's a couple blocks farther down the street. And we always walk out together after the game. And we're walking down 104th Street where a couple of the bars are. People are walking towards us. And I've always gotten the same line when somebody tells me how much I suck. We're walking along. I've got a toque on. I got my jacket up, my scarf on, because it's cold. And some guy's walking away and goes, "Remenda, you suck." And I said, I always say the same thing. I go, "Thanks for watching." And I keep walking. And he goes, "No, man, you make me want to hurt myself." And I went, "No, don't let me stop you."
I can't even comprehend that, because I felt watching you and listening to your broadcast, like I felt that I was learning a lot more about the game, and it was nice to hear it from that perspective that wasn't a brand builder or a rah-rah guy, that was just very honest and raw about the analysis. And I you know, obviously can't speak for the other 17,561 people, but, you know, I felt like I was learning a lot. And
well, that's what we wanted to do, right? We wanted to teach the game as much as we could. Being a coach, being a guy that worked at Hockey Canada, being a guy who got his level 5 in coaching and, you know, did all that coaching certification stuff and taught hockey schools all over the place, I wanted to continue to teach the game. And then maybe that's what they don't like in Edmonton, but it's to me, it's I learned in this business, you got to grow thick skin, man. If you're letting people who say that you suck or anything else throw your day off, then you're in the wrong business. If you got in this business to be liked, you're in the wrong business. We got in this business because it's an easy way to make a living. You know, it beats working for a living, doing what I do. So, well, I'll tell you another story about how much I suck. So the one year I went to hockey night, right? Okay, right. The one year I went to hockey. Remember that?
Yeah.
The year I went to hockey night. Okay. So Marty came in for me. We're doing the playoffs. Don Whitman, the late great Don Whitman, and me, doing the Calgary Detroit series. And game 6 in Calgary goes to overtime. Now in Calgary, they don't have a bathroom in their press box. Oh, it's just up overhead, and so you have to run to the public bathroom. So we're going into double overtime. So I run into the bathroom. And I don't know if you guys, you're in the bathroom, right? Public bathroom, and you're there and you're doing your thing. Do you ever get that feeling when somebody's just like staring at you? He wasn't right beside me, but there's somebody, you know, when somebody's staring at you, right?
Okay. When you're in a vulnerable position, probably.
You're exactly. So do my thing, wash my hands. And this guy keeps staring at me, And you know he's hammered. Like, totally Labatt blue right up to the brain, right? So I wash my hands. We'll start to walk away. And he just staggers over and goes, I want to tell you something. I went, okay, go ahead, Ben. I said, but I got to get back. He goes, no. Listen to me. I went, okay, dude, fire away. Goes, you are, without a doubt, I'm thinking, here comes a great compliment, right? I was ready to go off. Thanks very much, pal. Appreciate it. You are, without a doubt, the worst broadcaster Hockey Night in Canada has ever hired. I went, wow, that's a long list, dude. And he went, I'm telling you right now, the worst. I went, as my usual line, I said, well, okay. Well, thanks for watching. You know what he said? Oh, you're welcome.
Oh, see that, but that's that Canadian nice creeping in.
Yeah, oh man.
Yeah, he just said, oh, you're welcome. On your way, you go. Good luck in the Sydney double overtime.
Oh my God.
All right.
Thanks so much for doing this. I don't want to take up any more of your time. We just have a couple of quick ones left for you, if you could help us out.
Sure.
We know that Eric's mom laid this out there. I want to say
it was about 11 years ago.
About 10 years ago, and we've heard it on a radio cast and used as a bumper and whatnot. Are you still, in fact, a stud muffin?
No. I am now 56 years old. Unfortunately, stud muffin went away a long time ago. I have muffin tops now. But I don't think I'm a stud muffin.
I think she'll be okay with it.
She says hello, but yeah, we found the promo the other day, and I had to share that.
My wife heard that, and she looked at me and went, "Who are you kidding?"
Oh my God! I think we still have part of it here. Let me see.
I am a huge stud muffin and ass.
There you go.
Oh God. Okay, well then now you ask me why people let me to know, like, there you go. That's why.
Oh man. Well, again, thank you so much for doing this. Hopefully we can do it again down the road.
Hey, give me a call. You bet, you guys.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Drew. Really appreciate it. Miss you,
bye. All right, guys. Great talking to you again.
Right, have a great night, man.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to another cast from Teal Town USA. Remember to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Teal Town USA, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and find us on the web at tealtownusa.com.